You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cook, joined by Patrick Fitzgerald. In this episode, we're going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball, recap hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, and of course, give some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. Just additional note, we are recording this on a Wednesday, even though our pod normally comes out on a Saturday. So some of the news may be a little outdated by the time that you hear this, but hopefully we're at least on track with a bunch of the analysis that we're going to be giving you. But before we get into all of that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well. Happy last week of the regular season for a lot of our fantasy leagues out there. And for season long, happy, you know, 1 month ago, we're getting in the home stretch here. I got my only head-to-head team. I only have two head-to-head teams, but the one that's still in contention, I lost Zach Wheeler and Nate Eovaldi in the last week. So,
yikes.
I'm going to be tested a little bit, my management skills in the playoffs, but I guess that's just the way it goes sometimes. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm in the last official week of my home league, so it's going to be done with that on Monday, which is going to be kind of weird. And yeah, I've been slowly but steadily, just all my teams have been underperforming in the last month, essentially. In my PL staff league, I dropped from first place to now I'm sixth, I think, actually. Oof. So I need to check basically when playoffs start just to see if I even have a chance to be in the show. It looks like I did clinch a playoff spot there, so at least nice. I have something to play for. But yeah, it's been kind of rough. Like you, I also am dealing with losing Nathan Eovaldi on that team, but Yordan Alvarez is coming back on that team too, which is
me too.
Hopefully it's helpful. I actually don't know if it's actually going to be a good thing if he's coming back or not, but at least it gives me another potential power bat.
Yeah, I think it's hard to believe. I know he struggled a little bit at the beginning of the year, but it's hard to believe he won't be hitting and, you know, be a big plus asset down the stretch. Maybe not, you know, the first or second round guy we hoped, but I think he'll still be a big, you know, addition to the team.
Yeah, you think with the Astros calling him back, like they believe that he can at least contribute in a meaningful way down the stretch, as obviously they're trying to make sure that they secure the AL West crown, which you know, they're in a pretty good fight with Seattle for that spot. So I'm sure they didn't call him back just to be like, well, let's hope he can actually do something. they're probably expecting him to at least be, you know, 75% of the Yordan that we all know.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, before we get into the rest of the podcast, just a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we're going to get into injury news. Of course, as I mentioned, we're recording this on Wednesday, so there's a good chance that by the time you listen to this, there's going to be a couple more guys that are on the IL, but here are the kind of the notable names that have hit the IL since we last recorded. Starting off with Luis Robert Jr. of the White Sox, he's got a left hamstring strain. Graham Ashcraft of the Reds, he's kind of been more of a reliever this season. He is on the injury list with a right forearm strain. The big news that we kind of both mentioned earlier, Nathan Eovaldi has got a right rotator cuff strain. Rangers are basically saying he's out for season. They also don't have anything to play for in terms of the playoffs, so they're probably just going to be safe with Eovaldi and not have him start anytime soon. Jansen Juk of the Marlins, he's got a right ulnar nerve irritation. That sounds like something that's probably going to be out for a little bit. Trevor Bigill of the Brewers, really unfortunate news here. He's got a right flexor strain. I think the most recent news is that it's currently just a grade one strain, so not the worst outcome, but it still looks like he's going to be out for at least a month, maybe a little quicker, depends on how quickly he heals. But it's kind of important for the Brewers. They're losing their closer just as the final month is coming up on us, as we mentioned. They got a pretty decent lead in the pennant race, but obviously losing your closer is just never a good thing. You never want to have to deal with that. Jacob Lopez of the Athletics, he's got a left elbow flexor strain, likely out for season. Richard Fitz of the Red Sox. He's been kind of used in a more of a long relief, middle relief role, so not super important to the Boston rotation, but regardless, he's got right arm neuritis. He's going to be out for a little bit. Frankie Montas of the Mets, he's got a right elbow UCL injury, more or less was immediately transferred to the 60-day IL. Really unfortunate for him. Obviously, he was coming back from injury already, and it sounds like this is going to be pretty serious again for him. Nolan Schanuel of the Angels, he's got a left wrist contusion. Nico Cavadas is taking over for him at first, but there's not really any real fantasy implications there for Cavadas. Obviously, Schanuel, you know, decently solid first baseman, so that unfortunately will be a hit if you have him on your team and you're in the playoffs. Jackson Merrill of the Padres, he's dealing with a left ankle sprain. It sounds like it's still going to be a bit before he returns. And Marcus Semien's dealing with a left foot fracture. He is also likely out for season. Kind of similar to Eovaldi, Texas isn't playing for anything, so they're not really going to rush Semien back if they can help it.
Yeah. Shame to see Luis Robert go down. I mean, obviously, it's been a tough season for him, but he was having a great second half. Eovaldi, obviously, a huge loss for all of us. Richard Fitz, I was actually at the game, and he had thrown four innings and went back out for his next one. I think it was the first pitch of the inning, and something just wasn't right. Trainers came out, and he walked off the field, you know, pretty quickly. So clearly, he felt something right away. And then, yeah, Jackson Merrill. I mean, I want to say this is at least his third IL stint of the season. It's really just shaping up to be a lost year for him, unfortunately. You know, I'm sure the Padres are hoping that he'll be back for the playoffs and, you know, close to 100%. But for us fantasy managers, I mean, it's been a really tough year rostering Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, a bunch of these young outfielders just kind of dealing with injuries here and there. Jackson Chirio, who we'll kind of mention a little bit later, he's still dealing with injury as well. Granted, he hasn't been injured as often as Merrill, but nonetheless, you know, a lot of these kind of second-year guys, you know, Wyatt Langford. Evan Carter, if you kind of count him. You know, a lot of these young outfielders, like, all of a sudden are kind of dealing with injuries here and there.
Yeah, Dylan Cruz missed almost, like, I think maybe more than half the year. He's out forever.
Yeah, that's a big one, too. So, yeah, a lot of big names that probably were drafted, you know, not necessarily expecting them to be top 10 outfielders, but, you know, for sure people that could contribute as outfielder threes. Yeah, just all of a sudden, you know, taking those hits and getting on the injury list. Mm-hmm. In terms of returns, a lot of big names coming back as well. Semien's with Richardson is coming back for the Twins. There's not really a lot of fantasy value there, unless you're just trying to get a guy to eat innings. Nick Lodolo of the Reds is back, kind of, you know, as a result of that Graham Ashcraft move as well. He is starting tonight, but the game has not started yet, so we don't know what he'll look like. Kyle Bradish of the Orioles. We'll talk about his start a little bit later, but just the spark notes of it. 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 10 strikeouts, and no walks. A really good return for him from the 60-day IL. O'Neill Cruz of Pittsburgh is coming back from concussion IL. He was out for a little bit more than the 7-day minimum, so good to see him back. Yordan Alvarez, as we mentioned, back for Houston. Aloys Garcia back for the Rangers. Victor Robles off the 60-day IL for Seattle. Matt Chapman coming off the injury list for the Giants, and Kirby Yates coming off the injury list for the Dodgers. You know, their bullpen's kind of been in flux. Kirby has not yet pitched in a sort of save or hold situation, but I would not be surprised if they turned to him just kind of with the turmoil in that bullpen. Kind of the another name, I guess, Alex Vesia has hit the injury list for the Dodgers. So right now it's kind of just it's Tanner Scott, Blake Treinen, Kirby Yates are kind of the main three guys that they've got in the kind of the back half of their bullpen that Dave Roberts will be relying on in the late innings, but it still remains to be seen who really has the top of the pecking order in terms of getting saves there.
Yep, always a little infuriating when a really good team doesn't have a clear closer. Just such a fantasy headache, but we have to pay attention to it because of how many games they win. And then, yeah, just a note on Robles. He's playing right now. Yeah, I think his suspension is currently under appeal that he got in the minor leagues for throwing his bat at the pitcher. So he's going to be out for a little while once they finalize how many games that's going to be. And then also got a piece of breaking news. As we're recording this, Jameson Taillon has gone on the IL with a groin injury. Got pulled on Sunday after 5 innings with the groin tightness, and now he's on the IL. And I have him on my team with Nate Eovaldi and Zach Wheeler. So add another one to the pile.
Yeah, I was really hoping he was going to be back healthy. because as we're kind of talking, we're going to talk about a lot later in the podcast. The Cubs have a pretty nice schedule to end the season, and yeah, it's super unfortunate that Taillon is hurt again after having some pretty good success earlier this year. Mm-hmm. All right. In some other injury news, Logan Henderson of the Brewers, he is officially on the 60-day IL, dealing with right elbow inflammation. Unfortunately, going to be out for season for him. Young, really, really good year, I think, for Henderson. Unfortunately, it never seemed like the Brewers were kind of willing to kind of keep him up on the roster. But I think part of that was also just kind of innings manipulation and trying to get him to not have as much work. And yeah, unfortunately, now he's going to be out for season. Roki Sasaki of the Dodgers, of course, dealing with a shoulder issue. He is up to 75 pitches in his most recent rehab start. Not sure what the Dodgers are going to do in terms of bringing him back, because they currently have a 6-man rotation. And I don't know if bringing Roki back to again have a 6-man rotation makes a lot of sense. But, you know, with the AAA season also winding down, they might want to just have him get some reps in the majors just to see what he's got before the playoffs start. Michael King of the Padres, dealing with knee inflammation. He threw a simulated game, but it's going to still be at least a week before his return. The Padres said at least one more run through the rotation before King comes back. Landon Roop of the Giants, last week he went on the IL after kind of having his knee bend awkwardly. He is officially diagnosed with a bone bruise, not an ACL tear, as some people were fearing, but he is going to be out for season. Expect his return in 2026. Luis Severino of the Athletics, he's dealing with an oblique strain. He is going to face hitters in a simulated game, but so it's still probably going to be a couple weeks before he returns. Jackson Churro, as we mentioned, he's likely not back until next week, but he is progressing in his rehab. Same thing for Jordan Westberg of the Orioles, also likely not back until next week. And finally, Ryan Weathers, Miami is kind of saying that he's got two more rehab starts before returning to the majors. His next scheduled start is coming on Saturday. He has faced live batters already, so I think Miami is just kind of bringing him along at a pretty normal pace, but expect him to return probably sometime in mid-September.
Yep, hopefully get two good starts out of Weathers. I'm honestly more interested in him than Sasaki. Sasaki, just the results haven't been there on the rehab assignment, and he just can't get any whiffs on his fastball. So I don't really think you need to worry about him for this year, unfortunately. And then Jackson Churro, obviously super frustrating that the Brewers aren't bringing him back, but you know they have a huge lead in the division, and they're obviously trying to prioritize you know, keeping him healthy down the stretch and for the playoffs. So not good for us fantasy players, but you know, you kind of understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. And then some other news, a little random, but Ronzi Contreras is coming back. The Orioles selected his contract, and this is essentially setting up a 6-man rotation in Baltimore for now, with Tyler Wells returning as well. The only kind of reason this is a little bit notable is because Cal Bradish, as we mentioned, and Trevor Rogers are actually having like pretty solid pitching season so far, and going to a 6-man rotation, obviously that hurts down the stretch in fantasy, because it just means fewer starts for both those guys. But yeah, just kind of some interesting news that Baltimore is choosing to go to a 6-man rotation for now.
Yep. Yeah. Wells is actually making his final rehab start tonight, so lines up perfectly with Contreras. Looks like so far he's through 5 innings, 2 earned runs, only 2 strikeouts. So that's kind of the type of arm that he is. He's not a huge K guy. He'll probably go 6. Looks like he's at 66 pitches. So he will be fully built up, but obviously a much lower ceiling than, you know, a guy like Kyle Bradish.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for the injury recaps. We are now going to move into player performances starting on Friday, the 22nd. Who do we got?
Yep. Starting off on the hitting side with a twin. Brett the Hitman was Jonathan Metzelaar's hitter recap title, which was for Brett Beatty, who's on a nice run lately. But I'm going to be talking about another third baseman, Royce Lewis. He was 3-for-5 with a home run, 2 runs, 4 RBI, and a steal. So a rare combo meal for Royce Lewis. Kind of scary to see him steal a base, honestly, given all the soft tissue injuries. But it's been a disappointing season, right? He hasn't quite lived up to the hype or the peripherals. Currently a 52-point gap between his WOBA and the ex-WOBA we have on our site, 287 versus 339. And the overall profile has fallen, you know, quite short of the Royce Lewis that we have expected and that we saw in 2023. Even though he's made big progress in the strikeout department, 17.3% strikeout rate this year. It's easy to forget that he's only 26 years old and capable of going on a huge run when he's hot. Jonathan feels like he's worth keeping tabs on in case this is the beginning of a heater. He has, you know, showed some signs of life after a couple of IL stints, but in our shallower formats, do we feel like Royce Lewis is even draftable next year just because of all the injuries and the poor performance? I know third bases can be shallow sometimes, but you know, you can't feel good about drafting him really at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't feel good for Royce being a top 10 third baseman. Mm-hmm. There's an argument that he probably should be drafted in 12 teamers as a starting third baseman, just because, again, that position is so scarce. Right. Like, but there's competition, right? He is not for sure a top 12 guy, in my opinion. And there's kind of been some weird comments with him where he's just like, oh, I don't really want to mess with my swing because I don't want to kind of mess with my stats. He is, you know, going through arbitration. So there is a little bit of motivation to, you know, not try to, you know, screw up your stats. But the funny thing is his stats are terrible. So yeah. It's like you think that like just like making some changes might be nice and it might help your game. But yeah, he's kind of been, I guess, verbally to the press, he's been a little bit less enthused about, you know, mechanical changes. But it does sound like maybe there's something that he is working on right now to unlock some of this power to kind of get back to where he was before. I am kind of surprised that strikeout rate is actually that low. It kind of just means that his contact is awful. So I'm curious if he's kind of, you know, a little similar to like Adley, where it's just like these guys with good pedigrees who for some reason just can't get the bat to ball to, you know, kind of just land for hits.
Yeah, one thing that I wrote about him a few months ago and like my patience or panic series that I do for the site, and one thing I noticed is that his pull fly ball rates used to be way above average and now they're way below average. It looks like he's actually corrected that. So he's back to being solidly above average. So he's been leaning into the pull fly balls lately, which is great, right? I think his season-long numbers are still bad, but the last couple of months have been better. You just wouldn't really know it by looking at it. But yeah, I think you can't really rely on him, right? I think maybe if you want to like punt third base in a draft next year, you take Royce Lewis and another deep third baseman, because he can't be your only option at third base. You know, he's a guy that's so injury prone that you can't leave yourself a hole like that. So yeah, maybe like a late speculative pick, but you definitely should not, you know, be expecting too much, unfortunately, at this point. That's not to say like he's cooked, right? I think if he could put together a solid season and really get back on the fantasy radar, but I'm going to need to see that before I really have confidence in it.
Right. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, could go for 30 homers, right? The problem is he's not healthy enough. And when he's at the plate, he's not really making good contact. So the power is there, the raw skills are there, but unfortunately it just hasn't been able to put into practice in real life.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you hope it doesn't end up as like a what if kind of story, but it's kind of trending in that direction, unfortunately. On the pitching side, a big exciting return on Friday. It was Shane Bieber. I've got my Bieber back, was Nick's SP roundup. And we watched him on playback. He faced the Marlins in his season debut after coming back from elbow surgery that he had after he suffered an injury after just two starts last year. Great outing. Six innings, one earned, two hits, no walks, nine strikeouts, 15 whiffs, and a 33% CSW on 87 pitches, and got the win. And this isn't just an instance of blaming it on the Marlins, right? Shane Bieber looked really good. Last year, we saw his small velo bump to 92-93 for his first couple starts, and then he tore his UCL, but he did pick up where he left off, you know, in those couple starts. Sat 92.7 on the four-seamer, almost 7 feet of extension, 18 inches of vert, and a 1.4 height-adjusted vertical approach angle. So great shape on the fastball, even if the velocity isn't overpowering. And the fastball, you know, that's kind of Bieber's weakness, so it's nice to see it actually be a decent offering for him. A 7 out of 25 whiffs on the slider, great locations on that, Nick noted. Cutter was landing backdoor to lefties, and the changeup was really good against them too, with three strikeouts and four whiffs on 11 thrown to the lefties. And he mixed in the curveball as kind of a taste breaker. So super well-rounded, looked great on all his pitches, and obviously had a great overall line. Nick has actually moved from doing his top 100 list to a schedule-focused list, given how much little time is left. But he noted that he'd have Bieber easily inside the top 30 and maybe even the top 25 if he was doing the list, you know, his traditional way. So this kind of reminds me of someone we talked about returning, you know, maybe a month or 6 weeks ago, Brandon Woodruff, right? Two veterans coming back from really serious injuries who have at this point command over stuff profiles. So is there one that you're preferring down the stretch here, or do you just kind of see them as two great, you know, SP2-3 type options?
Yeah, I think both are very comparable with each other. Like if I had to pick, like I'd probably go with Bieber only because Woodruff, I think, is just more susceptible to the catastrophic injuries. Whereas Bieber's like, yeah, he tore his UCL last year, but for the most part, he's been, you know, generally healthy. But yeah, I think both those guys, like, you'd be excited to have on your team. You know, it's just a month left of baseball, too. So for both those guys, you know, they can be healthy for, I mean, knock on wood, I guess. But yeah, they can be healthy for a month and provide you with really solid play. Just looking at Woodruff's numbers, actually, I'm surprised he's managed to keep his whip so low, 0.87 through almost 50 innings. So really solid stuff there. But yeah, both those guys really good when they're on.
Yeah, I think I lean Bieber as well, just because of the volume. Woodruff is getting limited a little bit, it seems like. I think on a per inning basis, they're pretty similar pitchers, but the Blue Jays are going to have a six man, which, you know, might space out Bieber starts a little too much. But I think because they're in a six man, they're going to let him go deep, because, you know, he's going to be a playoff starter for them at this rate, and they need him, you know, to fire on all cylinders and then get his innings built up. So I think slightly in Bieber, but, you know, you're pretty ecstatic about either one of these guys.
Yeah, with Woodruff, I guess, and the Brewers, they're not moving to a six man anytime soon because everyone keeps getting hurt.
Yeah, that's true, unfortunately.
All right, moving on to Saturday. Thanks to Kevin O'Brien for Casey at the Bat, the Ritter Hitter Recap article. We're not going to talk about Casey Schmidt, who did have his eighth homer of the season, I believe, on this day. But we're going to talk about Trevor Story instead. 3-for-5 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. The Red Sox and the Yankees had a really fun series this past weekend, if you're watching into that baseball. But Saturday's game was a little bit lopsided. Boston won 12-1. And Story had another memorable day, as we mentioned. 3 hits, 3 RBIs. His 20th homer of the year in this one. And that actually brought him to a 2020 season. He has since added on to that total. He's now at 21 homers and 23 stolen bases. Obviously, really nice rebound season for Story, who's had less than 300 plate appearances in the previous two seasons. So seeing him, I think he's at like 450 or something like that. Actually, I have it up. He's at, 533. Yeah, so nice job for Story. Really, really had a solid comeback year this year. And if he gets a 25-25 season, is he basically a top 10 shortstop next year, or because of his injury risk, are you still going to kind of hedge on drafting Story? Some of the guys that are kind of in that range of top 10 guys who aren't top 5 guys, but, you know, guys that you would be considering in shallower leagues, Bo Bichette, Zach Nato, Jeremy Pena, are any of those guys that are like you would automatically draft over Story next year?
Yeah, I think I would prefer them all, honestly. Story's tough. Like, he had a combo meal at the game I was at on Monday. I have him in at least one league, and he's been great for me. It's just the plate approach really worries me, right? He walks more than, or he strikes out more than 5 times more than he walks. But at the same time, he's 100% on steals, right? He's 23 for 23 this year. So that tells me he's just going to keep running if he's going to have that level of success. So it is a really nice power speed profile. I think that the batting average is, the true talent batting average is lower than the 260 we're seeing right now. I do think there's some floor there. I think just given the durability and the sketchy approach, that those two things combined kind of scare me off. But sometimes I do, you know, shy away from guys who have bad plate approaches and as a result miss out on, you know, really exciting talent. So I think for the type of drafter I am, you know, I probably won't be willing to pay the price for a Story, but he's obviously capable of this kind of season, right? And the contract that Boston had him on isn't looking so bad now. It was looking terrible before, but he's putting together a great year.
Yeah, and the other thing to remember about Story too was just he had a really awful May, right? He came out the gates in April, pretty solid, hit 5 homers, and then in May he had a 158 average. But he's been pretty steady ever since. August was actually has been really good to him. 303 average there. So, you know, there maybe is something there to be said about maybe that average isn't completely real. But he is a righty who plays, you know, half his games at Fenway, right? Like that's going to help, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, he is, you know, prone to slumps here and there. I think there was even like people were like, you know, obviously Red Sox fans are a little nuts, but, you know, they're like, oh, he should be sent back to the minors because of how awful he's doing. You know, that's obviously not what Boston's going to do with him. But at the same time, yeah, there's a little bit of trend of inconsistency with him. But if you're willing to gamble and you've got, you know, another shortstop that, you know, you can kind of trust, like maybe it's an interesting play that you end up doing. But yeah, he sometimes feels like a stay away only because of the inconsistency and the injury risk for him.
Right. I think we talked about him in like April when he got off to a great start, and we kind of agreed like when he's on the field, he'll be good. And then right after that, he was terrible. But then we look back and he's been really good, right? So if you held him all year, you're really happy with what you got.
Yeah. He's like one of those guys where it's like, it's great for roto, and head to head, it's a little scarier.
Might drive you crazy a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to pitching. Again, Nick with the ESPN Roundup article, Jack B. Nimble, Jack B. Zip, referring to Jack Leiter, who had a really solid 7-inning game on Saturday. But we're not going to talk about Leiter. We're going to talk about Nestor Cortez instead, who got the win against the Dodgers. 6 innings, 0 earned runs, 1 hit, no walks, and 3 strikeouts. Yeah, kind of a crazy start from Cortez. Definitely not expected at all that he was going to be able to shut out the Dodgers. But he was great at just basically throwing cutters and four-seamers all over the plate. And just the Dodgers could not touch those. His 90-mile-an-hour fastball was up and away to righties. And that basically allowed the cutter to kind of just be wherever it was over the plate. Wasn't really greatly located, I would say. But it allowed also then to set up his sweeper, which had 5 whips on the day there. He also had some changeups, even though those weren't the greatest. But really, Nick, when he looked at this this start, and kind of when you look at the metrics behind the start, it was a little bit of a luck. Basically, kind of at a Koufax day where a lot of the balls that were getting hit in the infield were getting picked up and basically becoming ground outs. And it was probably one of Cortez's best days in terms of command. If you look at Pitcherless's hit luck metric, which basically just compares total hits minus total expected hits from PLV, basically PLV kind of assumes he probably actually should have given up six hits. Basically, he should have given up 5 more hits on his pitches, which, you know, could definitely change the way this game looks if he, you know, gave up more than just 1 hit on his 6 innings. Cortez, unfortunately, I think the story with him, he's just been pretty rocky since his elite 22 season with the Yankees. He was with the Brewers early of the season before they traded him to the Padres. So does Cortez really have anything else to offer this year? You know, being on the Padres, it's a good win chance, I guess. But is he that, or is he just a stay away because of his volatility?
Yeah, I guess I see him as a win streamer. But it's tough because like starts like this are part of what makes fantasy so frustrating. Like I know the Dodgers aren't the best lineup in the league right now, like they had been for the first few months. So they're not an automatic sit. But, you know, if you're applying the right process, you're not starting this game and then he throws an absolute gem. So it's frustrating. And Nestor Cortez had a terrible first start of the year, and then he got hurt after his second start. So his season-long numbers are like just very weighed down by that. So it's hard to really judge his talent. So I think you have to, you know, just kind of look at years past and think, you know, he's a steady arm, but he's not, you know, lights out consistently. So I don't see him as a great asset in quality starts leagues because he's not going deep all that much. But yeah, I think a win streamer is kind of how I'm seeing him right now. But as we can see, the matchup doesn't dictate everything, right? Like we had him in the streamers last week because he had the Giants first and then the Dodgers, and the Giants is the one you're targeting, and that was the worst start. So, you know, it's a little bit frustrating. But yeah, I think he's in win streamer territory. I have him in that league where all my pitchers are getting injured, and he's definitely not going anywhere now because I don't have any alternatives. So
yeah, he does get Minnesota on Friday, and I will tell you that will be a great start for Cortez. I can tell you just unequivocally, it's going to go well for him.
Yeah, I mean they put together a decent outing tonight against another soft toss and lefty, Eric Lauer, but maybe that's just an overperformance.
Yeah, exactly.
So on Sunday the 24th, tis the season to own Raleigh was Johnny Gordon's hitter recap. Not too much to really say about Cal Raleigh other than he's awesome, and it's great that he's given Aaron Judge a run for the MVP. So I'm going to be talking about a slightly disappointing hitter who did have a good night. That's Gunnar Henderson of the Orioles. He was 2-for-4 of the homer, 2 runs, an RBI, and 2 steals, so a combo meal plus an extra bag. That brought his season total to where they are right now as of recording this, 16 home runs and 19 steals. 19 steals are only 2 off his career high of 21, but the home runs have taken a big step back. He was 37 last year. Like I said, only 16 this year. Did miss a little bit of time, but not that much. And the season-long line of 281, 352, 468 is really solid, but it's a big step back from last year where he was fantastic in 281, 364, 529. This is a guy who was right in the middle of the first round in some drafts, and then as there was some concerns about the spring training injury, he kind of fell to like the end of the first and beginning of the second, but After this kind of mediocre season, at least by his standards, how much has Gunnar Stock, you know, fallen under us?
It feels crazy to say he's not a top five shortstop, because I think if you don't draft him as a top five guy, you're just going to miss out. Right. It feels like he's a guy who's going to get taken in the first two rounds next season. Right. I could see him dropping to the end of the second round, you know, maybe a round where guys are picking up like Lindor, or Bichette's probably not there anymore. It's, you know, Trey Turner, you know, guys like that. It just feels like his stock is going to be around there, right? He's not a first round guy, but I can't see him, you know, getting past the second, just because the pedigree is there. And it's like, he had one good season a couple years ago, right? And just, you can't write him off completely because he had one bad season. And like you said, the numbers are still decent enough that it's not a horrible season. It's just that he's not a first round talent. So I think if cooler minds prevail, I think he ends up still going in like the bottom of the second round.
Yeah, I don't think it takes a huge hit. Even as an Orioles fan, I was kind of tepid on him as a first round pick. Like, he's obviously a fantastic player, but he's like a walk heavy guy, right? Like, I didn't think that necessarily from a fantasy perspective it made sense. Even though he's been decent, right? And we didn't project the Orioles offense completely falling off. So yeah, I think it's a small hit to the value just as elite talents kind of rise past him, but I don't think he really hurt himself all that much. It looks like in that draft that we were talking about last week with the bunch of industry players, the 15-teamer, he was the 15th pick. So he's the last pick of the first round in a deeper league, so shallower league, probably middle of the second round, like you're saying.
Yeah, so there's still some faith in him, right? Like, if he ends up, you know, getting a 30-20 season next year, I think you'd probably be pretty happy with that sort of projection. You know, even if he ends up with, you know, essentially a 2020 season this year, I don't think that's going to dampen people's expectations of what his power could be next year.
Right. And it's nice to see the batting average. You know, I honestly thought he would be more like a 260 to 265 hitter with a ton of counting stats, but, you know, he's been 280 for the last couple of years. So clearly that is a skill that he has.
Yeah. I am curious, though, how the runs in RBI get affected just with the kind of this season of Baltimore's like kind of ineffectiveness at the plate. You know, how does that kind of bring his numbers down if the runs in RBI aren't there?
Right. You'd hope Basayo and Holiday take steps forward and Adley Rutschman at least gets a little bit better from, you know, just a league average hitter. And then that's a really, you know, you have Westberg in there. Hopefully he stays healthy. And that's a really strong, you know, top six of the lineup. So hopefully they'll be good, but, you know, you never know. Mm-hmm. On the pitching side, another, you know, slightly concerning performance. Nick highlighted Yoandris Gomez of the White Sox with Wake Me Up Before You Gomez in the SP Roundup. I don't think we need to worry about him for shallow leagues. So I want to be talking about Robbie Ray. He was at the Brewers, and this one took a no decision. 5 innings, 3 earned, 6 hits, 4 walks, and no strikeouts. Only 5 whiffs, 20% CSW on 80 pitches. And Ray's a guy whose ace is going to ace, and that's kind of what Nick was expecting here, but no strikeouts, start hurts you everywhere. You know, no Ks, bad whip, mediocre ERA. And yeah, as Nick likes to say, how am I supposed to butter my bread with this? When you see 4 walks and no strikeouts, you know, that's a point where you start thinking about, is this guy injured? And Ray's velo was down 91 miles per hour on the four seam after, you know, being between 93 and 94 for most of the year. Last start before this one was 92, and now it's 91.3. So, you know, we can't really drop Robbie Ray, right? He's been a top 10, I think, starting pitcher this year. But, you know, where are you kind of like on the panic meter here, scale of 1 to 10 after a couple of bad performances and lower velo?
Yeah, I think there's a legitimate fatigue issue here. Last year, only pitched 30 innings, then he got hurt. Or actually, I think those 30 innings came at the end of the year, right? Maybe it was the beginning of the year. Needless to say,
He came back. I think he came back from elbow surgery like Bieber.
Yes,
and
right. Jazz, yeah. Yep. 2023, that's when he got Tommy John because he only pitched 3 innings, blew out his arm the first start. So he has not pitched more than, currently he's at 159. He has not pitched more than that since 2022. So even though his arm has quote unquote been rested the last two seasons, really he's just never had, he hasn't pitched at this volume. So I am not surprised that the velocity is going down. Like you said, though, he's not really a guy you can drop, unfortunately, right? He still is, you know, top 20 talent, relatively speaking. But, you know, maybe you give it a little bit more thought before you start him, right? Maybe he's not an auto start anymore. Maybe he's a guy that you consider more of a premium streamer, especially if that fastball is not getting up there. And if you're in a quality starts league, I think this is where maybe you get a little worried, because he's I highly doubt he's going to go six in most of his starts the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's a good point about the returning, you know, from arm injury, right? Like guys like Woodruff, guys like Bieber, Bradish, you know, it's great to see them back on the mound for the last couple months of the year. And we'd much rather that than a guy who misses the entire season and we never see him. But just because they got back on the mound doesn't mean it's going to be, you know, all systems go necessarily for next year, right? It doesn't mean you need to cross them off your board, but it is something to be aware of from a workload perspective, I think, for sure.
Yeah, they just could push down, you know, one round or two. And, you know, I talked about this at PitchCon on the panel I was on, which is basically like guys we were down on. And a lot of the guys that we were down on were guys who had like incredible workloads the year before, but didn't have that track record of workload, right? So the guys, let's call the guys we named, Cole Riggins, Michael King, right? You never want to wish injury on someone, but the reality is they had pitched a lot the year before. And these guys also have history of, you know, some form of injury. And so just the reality is like they're just going to deal with more fatigue the year after they went really hard the year before. So for Robbie Ray's case, right, like he's 33. He's not necessarily like a young pitcher anymore. And he's already had like nearly 160 innings. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that his velocity is seeing a little bit of a dip.
Yeah. Speaking of workload, for me, that was Zach Gallen, not coming into this year, but going into 2024. Like,
sure.
Diamondbacks made it to the World Series. He threw 210 innings in the regular season and then probably another 30 more in the postseason. And he hasn't been the same since. I mean, you know, that's just the body is not really meant to withstand something, you know, that crazy. There's a reason why we see so many spot starts and, you know, brief IL stints and things like that, especially as guys are throwing harder. You know, it's just the nature of the game, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. It's the combination of definitely throwing harder, right? Going more at max effort. And, you know, as much as like people like to say, like, you know, guys like, you know, Randy Johnson or even just random dudes, you know, Brad Radke comes to mind to me as a Twins fan. Like these guys were consistently going over 200 innings every single season, but they also weren't chucking like 97 into the sixth inning for a lot of their starts. So, yeah, unfortunately, that's just kind of what you're seeing with a bunch of these guys where the velo is high, the effort is high, and so they just can't sustain it for, you know, the same number of innings as like the guys 20, 30 years ago could.
Yep. 180 is the new 200, 160 is the new 180.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're Nolan Ryan, then you're just a freak and no one understands how that works. All right, moving on to Monday. Thanks to Christian Ottoman for the Perks of Being a Walner hitter recap article referring to Matt Walner, who got a homer on Monday. Unfortunately, he has not been very consistent in terms of power. He has 30 homer power, but he doesn't really have 30 homer consistency, unfortunately. So we're not going to talk about him. We're going to talk about Junior Caminero instead of the Rays. 4-for-5 with a double, 2 homers, 4 runs, 3 RBI, and a stolen base. A rare combo meal for Junior Caminero. Maybe that's the theme, third baseman getting weird combo meals. But Caminero, unlike Royce Lewis, has been one of the best hitters in baseball this season. His bat speed, his power, and the hot streaks that he goes on can single-handedly win you weeks, especially when timed with the fantasy playoffs, which, of course, are coming up pretty soon for everyone. Monday's performance is just another example in a long list of excellent games for Caminero this season. He's currently at 39 homers, 79 runs, and 94 RBI. Also has a 259 average to boot, and he's ranked as the second best third baseman after Jose Ramirez. How high are you willing to draft Caminero next year? Could you see him going in the second round just with a positional scarcity at third? Or is there even a case for him to even be going at the end of the first round, which is how rough third base is?
Yeah, I mean, I can see second round for sure. The numbers that he's putting up, it's like, right, like peak Austin Riley, right? So with maybe even a little more power, and he's a second round pick at his best, so I can see it. But this is going to be a really tough eval for me. Like, the Rays are going back to Tropicana Field, right? Caminero has been amazing at home. I think he has half his home runs at home and on the road, but the batting average difference is like over 100 points. So at the same time, though, I don't want to read too much into one season worth of home road splits. So there's just a lot of changing variables, not to mention he's only 22, right? He's going to get better, presumably. So it's a really tough one. I think maybe third round might be where I would get more comfortable taking him, maybe at the end of the second round in a deeper league. I do have some concerns about the change in venue, right? Like the Rays, obviously. Tropicana Field is not known as a good place to hit, and they're playing in a minor league ballpark right now. So that's a big change. I think the whole lineup's going to suffer, right? The Rays lineup right now isn't even that good, and imagine how much worse it's going to get once they go back to Tropicana Field. So I wouldn't say I'm fading him or anything like that, but I do think, yeah, if it's a consistent mid-second round price, I might be looking elsewhere. But I also thought he was getting, you know, I was a little worried about the price this year, right, inside the top 100, and clearly that was, you know, more than merited. So might just be a little bit low on him generally.
Yeah, he was going 73. That was his ADP. So kind of.
Wow, ended, even higher, yeah.
So end of the sixth round for like a 12-teamer or, you know, end of the fifth for a 15-teamer. Yeah, I think top three is definitely where he's at. Top two, I think, just if, you know, if you kind of, if I just think of like, you know, guys that I valued like Rafael Devers or like Alex, maybe not Alex Bregman, but like, yeah, Rafael Devers, Austin Riley after his really good year, you know, where were they're kind of going? And it was like, yeah, kind of end of second round, maybe. JRAM is just kind of the unicorn, obviously, out of all those guys. And he's continuing to be incredible this season. But yeah, Caminero has been really showing out, and I was kind of surprised that he's almost at 40 homers. I actually didn't realize he was having that. I knew he was having a good season, but I didn't realize it was that good of a season.
Yeah, he hits him in bunches, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, two homer game this day. So yeah, for sure. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick for the Ian Gemming SP Roundup article, referring to Ian Seymour, I believe, of the Rays, who had a pretty good start. But I don't know if I'm chasing him for any of his upcoming starts, because I just don't know anything about him. So I'd rather shoot for some other guys. One of those guys might be Emmett Sheehan of the Dodgers, who went up against Cincinnati, got the win, 7 innings, no one runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. I believe you called this out as a stream last week.
Yes.
So nice job here. Of course, getting the Reds carpet, basically the Reds away from Great American Small Park is pretty nice. But the fact that he did this with 20 whiffs was pretty incredible. The four-seamer was well-located up in the zone. The slider was pretty decent as well. And he has his third pitch, the changeup, was pretty good. That's all he needed against basically this mediocre Cincinnati offense. Looking at kind of the fan four, you know, project numbers that we've got, which is basically kind of your metrics on a fastball. Sheehan was basically grading out at 139 fan four plus, so kind of similar to a WRC plus scale. So 100 is average. So obviously a really good four seamer from him, this one, and then a 118 POV location plus on that pitch as well. So really well located fastball coming in at around 96, 97 miles an hour with a 1.7 degree height adjusted vertical attack angle, 17 to 18 inches of vert, really good extension as well. Yeah, just a really solid fastball that set the table really well for his other two breaking pitches. And against a weak offense like Cincinnati, that really worked out pretty well. As we'll discuss later, Sheehan's got a very nice set of matchups coming up. But kind of to preempt the question, is he a guy that should just stay on your roster for now? Or is he still a little bit of a premium streamer where, you know, you might drop him for a bad start and, you know, pick him up a little bit later? Or is he just a guy that you just want on all your teams?
Yeah, I think given what he's got coming up, he should be locked into your team unless, you know, you just have an absolutely fantastic staff. He kind of reminds me of like Ryan Nelson a little bit in terms of like great fastball. And then it seems like the slider is a decent weapon for him. So maybe he's already finding that second pitch a little bit more quickly than Nelson, but that should allow him to just really move through lineups, and obviously great win chance on the Dodgers. So I really like Sheehan. I think in depending on the price next year, I think he might be a really big target of mine. Obviously, you have to assume the Dodgers are probably going to have a six-man rotation, which hurts his value a little bit, especially in like weekly lock formats where we look for two-start weeks every once in a while. But great foundation for the arsenal. And it's looking like he's going to get a decent enough workload this year that he shouldn't be hugely limited next year. So yeah, it's really nice to see him, you know, getting healthy and having a lot of success.
Yeah, 10 out of 31 whips on the slider in this start. Really solid there. Actually, really great numbers, to be honest. Like, that's really great. And then 4 out of 17 whips on the changeup, too. So really effective. And yeah, when I was kind of prepping, I was like thinking, like, does he make the starting rotation for the Dodgers next year? Because right now, that rotation is Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Shohei Ohtani, assuming he pitches, which he probably will. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of got a jumble of guys. Well, okay, Yoshinobu Yamamoto is obviously a lock as well, right? So that's four locks right now on the Dodgers rotation. And then the question is, like, does Roki Sasaki kind of regain his spot? Is Ben Kasperius a guy that the Dodgers are looking at to, like, kind of be a starter as well? Emmett Sheehan, obviously, as we kind of talked about, I don't know if Gonsolin's under contract next year for them, but, you know, he's another guy. Gavin Stone's around as well. And then they still have
River Ryan.
Yeah, they still have a bunch of, like, decent guys in their farm system that could come up and, you know, be starters for other teams. So it's a very interesting situation that the Dodgers have. It's kind of frustrating that, you know, they have this many good pitchers, but when they keep on getting hurt, that's kind of where it's nice to have a bunch of these guys. But yeah, Sheehan's going to be interesting. I think if he makes a rotation, and even if it's a six-man rotation, I think I'd be interested in picking him up as, like, a late flyer, you know, a guy like an SP5, SP6 on a roster where, you know, you can shovel him up and down if you need to, but, you know, he still kind of stays on your team for most of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's better than Sasaki right now, but obviously they're not going to give up on him because he's on a long-term deal. Also, you know, very slim chance that all these guys are healthy by the time the season starts, right? So I think Sheehan might not be locked into the rotation, but definitely has the inside track. So moving to the 26th, it was, yep. 26th, nothing but Neto with Scott McDermott's hitter recap, and I am going to be talking about the title man, Zach Neto. Great outing by Patrick Corbin against Neto's Angels. He threw 8 scoreless innings, but then in the 9th, Neto would not be denied, hit a home run against Danny Coulomb, which was his 23rd homer of the season, multi-extra base hit game for Zach Neto, and he's really starting to stand out at a deep shortstop position. He's only behind Francisco Lindor in home runs at the position with 23, and he's threatening a 30-30 even in a season that was delayed by, I think, about a month or at least a few weeks because of a shoulder surgery in the offseason. He played in 155 games last year and had 30 steals and took a big step forward in the power department, which was 25 more steals than he had in his rookie year. And now he's taken another step forward. He's a pure pull hitter, which kind of is how he taps into that power, high fly ball rate and a high pulled fly ball rate. So he hits a lot of home runs to, you know, short porches in left field. But he's also hitting the ball a lot harder. Exit velocity up from 88.5 last year to 91 this year, which is comfortably above average. And then a 14% barrel rate, which is almost elite. So his expected slugging is actually a little higher than his actual slugging percentage. So, you know, it's not like he's just lucking into it or hitting some fence scrapers here. Might not be the best points league option because he does strike out about 20% more of the time than he walks. But still, you know, it's been an awesome season and a huge, you know, a huge coup for all the managers who took the injury discount and top 5 shortstop in categories, at least at this point, too. So might be underrated again, but also maybe not. I was looking at the draft board last week for that draft we were talking about, and Zach Neto went 24th. So solidly in the second round of a 15 teamer. He was the pick right after Trey Turner and got drafted ahead of Ketel Marte, Ronald Acuna, and Pete Alonso. So that tells you how highly he's thought of right now. Is that a little too rich for you, or what do you think?
I want to say it's too rich. and yet, like, if he has a 30-30 season next year, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good discount, actually, to get a guy like that, right? Like, that's basically, you know, these are guys like Bobby Witt, right? Or, you know, Lindor is kind of in that conversation sometimes. You know, really good shortstops who can provide you 5 category help. And I do think that, like, this is probably this upcoming draft is probably the last year that you can get Neto for cheap. And by cheap, it's like really like I think if you're like drafting in like just a regular league, you know, you don't have any like industry wizards with you. Like, you could probably get him 3rd, 4th, 5th round just because like some people will look at his stats this year and just be like, oh, that wasn't that great. But yeah, second round is crazy ahead of like some of those guys that you mentioned. But with how poor shortstop is, you know, I could see it. I don't think I'm getting him at that price in a 15 teamer next year. I just don't think I could do that, but I could see why someone could talk themselves into it.
Yeah, I wish I had more confidence in the Angels' ability or willingness to build a really solid offense around him. you know, they've been a decent offense this year, but, you know, I don't know how much faith I have in that continuing. Mike Trout's only getting older, right? I'm not sure who the pending free agents are, but there might be some there too. So that's a little concerning, the context. And yeah, it's just such a high price. I mean, I think that, you know, we have to be wary of buying off of career years sometimes, right? I think that consistently buying into someone's career year is a way to build a disappointing team. But at the same time, if someone makes real improvements, you know, buying into it is not a bad thing to do. So I think that's a little too high for me. You know, guys like Acuña and then Pete Alonso and Ketel Marte, like, they're such great fantasy talents that I would feel safer with them, at least in a high stakes league. But maybe in a lower stakes league or more, you know, just a shallower league, I'd be okay going for Neto there. But I think in my first two rounds, you know, in higher stakes league, I'm going for a little more safety. But I mean, if he has another season like this, then he's considered a safe player. So I don't want to, you know, make it seem as if he's some, you know, super risky asset or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point that, like, because of the team context, it actually doesn't make him a pure five category player in the sense that, like, he's just going to struggle in probably the RBI department the most.
Yeah.
And we saw this so much with Trout too, right? Where it's like he'd get a decent number of runs, he'd have good homers, but the RBIs were always a little bit lacking because there was just no one on base for him to bat in. So, yeah, that's where maybe...
Right, and he gets lead off, yeah.
Yeah, that too. So the average also, maybe it's a little... I wouldn't say it's suspect, but, you know, he is having a career year in terms of average as well. You know, if that regresses down to, you know, 250, does that make his price a little different? And this is, I mean, again, this is not saying that we're trying to suppress Neto's ability. I think he's clearly like he has the potential to be a top five shortstop. But yeah, just 24th pick in general, that seems a little high, I'll just say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. And I don't think it's going to happen immediately, but the steals, you know, his success rate is like right on the line where it's like maybe he shouldn't be running this much. He was 30 for 40 last year, which is solid, not great. Mm-hmm. This year he's taken a little step back, 23 for 32. So he's still successful, you know, at least two-thirds of the time, which is good. I think 70% is typically what you know, look for. And I don't think the Angels are going to, like, rein him in next year, but, you know, it might be something in the future where the speed isn't, you know, as dependable as you might like it to be. On the pitching side, another exciting elbow injury returnee. We talked about him earlier, and it's Kyle Bradish. It's been a Kyle with Nick's SP roundup. I love watching this one as an Orioles fan. It's so great to see him back on the mound. You know, he might not be an ace, but he might be. I mean, he honestly showed some ace level stuff in this, and we've been lacking that frontline starter this year. So it was great to see the full line with 6 innings, 2 earned, 4 hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts. Just a pair of solo home runs got him. 15 whiffs, 36% CSW on 81 pitches. Did take the loss, unfortunately, because of the 2 runs. But Nick noticed that he was really impressed with Bradish's command of the sinker. You know, he was able to get some called strikeouts on the pitch. And then his breaking balls looked great. I mean, he's kind of known for that sweeping slider that just absolutely cuts across and out of the zone. And that was looking really sharp, and it's thrown hard too. And then the curveball, a little slower, but really nice vertical movement. The pair combined for 11 whiffs on 28 thrown. Curveball sat 83, and the slider had negative 11 inches of horizontal break at, you know, a mid to upper 80s velocity. So great, great offering. The four-seamer, Nick notes, has been an issue for Bradish in the past. It kind of has cut ride movement, but a lot of cut, honestly. It has negative 2 inches of horizontal break. So it does kind of function more as a cutter than a traditional four-seam. So Nick really wants to see Bradish use the cutter / four-seam against lefties and the sinker more often against righties. That's what he's hoping for, you know, in terms of Bradish's approach moving forward. And then he's got the 2 solid breakers off of it. So yeah, we're late in the season. I think Bradish is probably universally owned in, you know, first come, first serve leagues, but are we emptying the FAB budget for him in our NFBC leagues or, you know, other formats that use that system?
Might as well, because who else are you going to be using it on at this point, right? Like, I mean, unless you really think that, like, Jonah Tong is going to be, like, something for the Mets. I really like Bradish. I think even if the metrics on his fastballs aren't like that great, right? He doesn't necessarily get great extension, doesn't have great IVB. You know, velocity's fine at like 94. But if you can kind of mix all those pitches really effectively together, right? Like, there's no reason that He isn't worth rostering. And I think maybe one good thing about like Baltimore going to the six-man rotation is that it just gives him a little bit more time to recover. Obviously, coming back from that elbow injury, it just is nice that he gets a little bit more time between starts. And so, yeah, maybe even though he gets, you know, fewer starts, maybe let's just say he gets five starts to end the season and you're in a roto league that goes all the way to the end of the year. Like, that's still pretty valuable. Like, if it's, you know, good innings and good strikeout numbers. Obviously, 10 strikeouts would be insane if you got that every start. But it seems like he's, you know, doing pretty well against a good team like Boston as well. I don't see any reason to not do everything you can to pick him up.
Yeah, I think he's definitely the top target this week. You know, if you really wanted Bieber and missed out on him, he's a good option. It would have been fun if they kept the five-man because his starts next week would have been at the Padres and home against the Dodgers. So it would have been, you know, you're rolling with that and you're just crossing your fingers, right? It would have been a fun way for him to kind of, you know, start on your team. But it seems like probably just going to be one start per week from here on out. Yeah, I think he's got high enough strikeout upside that you're okay with getting one start per week. You can still put him in your lineup. Not super high win chance compared to a lot of other arms, which is unfortunate. But yeah, the stuff looked basically like it looked, before he got hurt. So it's nice to see that, you know, he's got a pretty good shot to just continue to be kind of a like SP2, SP3 type. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's, for sure, like that type of talent being available this late in the season, you might as well go for it because you don't know. You probably just don't have a chance for the rest of the season to get someone that good.
Yeah, I used a good chunk of my remaining fab on Sean Manaea this week. And I'm happy to have him on my team, but then he didn't get two starts. So I put him on my bench because the Mets are doing a six man. It's like, I wish I had my extra, $12 to bid on Kyle Bradish, but
right.
What are you going to do? I didn't think he was going to look this good.
Exactly. Yeah. That's probably going to be the risk where it's like, oh, 10 strikeouts. Like, obviously that's just going to like get a lot of eyes. I'm not saying it's a mirage, but Bradish's, his strikeout numbers like do kind of scream that he could do this, right? 32% last year, but granted, that was only through 8 starts. But then 25% strikeout rate in 2023 when he went 30 starts. So, he's not necessarily the strikeout artiste, but he certainly can do them in bunches, as to some of his previous starts have indicated.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, that is it for player recaps because, of course, we are recording this a little bit a day earlier, so nothing on Wednesday, although apparently the Yankees went insane in their game and batted for 41 minutes in one half of the inning. So still a lot of crazy baseball going on and a lot of interesting stuff. But we're going to go with a little bit of an extended streamer segment. As we all know, Patrick, you write the expected schedules article about once every other week for Pitcher List. And so I'm sure we've got some interesting names coming up that you might want to be considering starting or potentially not starting because of their matchups.
Yeah. So I'm going to hit a quick recap and then talk about, how we're going to be approaching the streamers this week. So going back to 2 weeks ago, streamers, Zebby Matthews had a rough start. Unfortunately, it's just been kind of a lost season for him. 4 2/3, 4 earned, bad whip at 2.36. Jose Quintana was fine, 5 1/3 with a no decision, 2 strikeouts, 2 earned runs, and a 0.75 whip. And then Nestor Cortez was the second start of the week. Like we said earlier, great start, 6 shutout innings with 1 base runner. And then last week, really good streaming results so far for last week. Emmett Sheehan, like we talked about, got the win in 7 shutout innings with 10 strikeouts and only 3 base runners. Michael McGreevy in his first start, no decision, 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, 4 earned runs at 1.33 whip. And then Parker Messick was the other streamer, and he had a great outing too, 7 shutout, just like Sheehan, 6 strikeouts, 0.57 whip. So getting back on track with the streamers, which is great to see. And then this week, we're going to take a little bit more of a longer look for the rest of the season with only 4 to 5 weeks left, and then focus in on a couple guys for next week. So with a PL Pro membership, you can view 2 weeks of Nick's sit start recommendations, and also a live expected SP schedules Google sheet that has the matchups for every rotation for the next 4 weeks. And each starter has an average opponent value for their remaining starts over those 4 weeks. And that value is based on our projections here and also Process Plus metrics. So it captures, how an offense is expected to do and also how well they've been doing lately in terms of their process at the plate, swing decisions, power, and contact. And it's graded on a scale of 1 to 5. So 1 is a hard matchup, 5 is the easiest matchup, and, you know, 3 tiers in the middle there. So first, we're going to talk about the teams whose rotations have good matchups coming up. That's the, or I guess not just coming up, the remainder of the season, really. That's the A's, Cubs, Dodgers, Marlins, Mariners, and Blue Jays. And we're going to focus on a couple of arms here. So Jeffrey Springs is one. A's rotation, you know, they had the best matchups, I think, but not a lot going on there, unfortunately, in terms of talent and streaming options, because they really struggle and have a tough home park. But Jeffrey Springs, he has a 3.67 out of 5 for his 3 remaining starts, which is at St. Louis, home against Boston, and at Boston. But the A's rotation is a little bit in flux with injuries, so just make sure you check on how those matchups may change. Colin Reyes, another one of the Cubs, he has a great matchup. 4.25 out of 5 for his 4 remaining starts, so almost perfect. 3 home starts, Atlanta, Washington, Tampa Bay, and then at Cincinnati. He's a great wins play. And yeah, he's not a great pitcher, I would say. Decent pitcher, lower strikeout upside, but great wins play. Got to unfortunately put a big line through Jameson Taillon because of the injury. And then 2 Dodgers arms I wanted to focus on, Emmett Sheehan, Clayton Kershaw. Next 2 starts are great at Pittsburgh and then Rockies at home. Great win, great quality start opportunity. And lastly, we talked about rehabbing Ryan Weathers. Marlins have some good series the last couple of weeks, so he could return to a good matchup. Not going to be, you know, in the next week or two, but could be like a good last start if you're in the championship or something like that. So is there anyone in these guys kind of sticking out to you, John?
I mean, I think Colin Rea and Clayton Kershaw are 2 guys to look at a little bit more. Rea, I mean, like you mentioned, just not a very good pitcher. Atlanta's, you know, they're not really playing for anything anymore, but it's still a dangerous offense. You know, he's got a 3.96 ERA on the season, 1.29 whip. Strikeout rate and walk rate are not very good. It's got a 70% strikeout rate, 7.1% walk rate. So only basically a 10% K minus BB. Doesn't have a lot going for him. But like you said, he's pretty much a wins play because despite all those really not great stats, he's got 10 wins on the season. Just thanks to this Cubs offense that even with Kyle Tucker kind of just being an absolute zero, they're still doing pretty well. So yeah, Colin Rea, you know, going over to Atlanta, the Cubs still have stuff to play for, even though they're, you know, probably, I can't remember the last time I checked, they're like 5-6 games behind the Brewers. So it's kind of tough for them to really make a push into the NL Central division race, but you know, they're still easily the top wildcard team right now. I'm sure they'd like to keep it that way. So the Cubs still have a lot to play for, even if they're not really necessarily angling for the division crown anymore. And so Ray is going to get that, probably going to get that run support. And against, you know, not just this Atlanta start, but really the next 3, Washington, Tampa Bay, and even at Cincinnati, those are all, you know, pretty decent starts that I'd like to see him go for.
Yeah, and one thing I want to point out is 3 of those 4 starts are at home. And Wrigley, as it gets colder, can play really pitcher friendly. It's going to depend on the wind and stuff. So I like to check like over unders, like betting lines, because it kind of captures how they expect the runs to be scored. Like typical game, I'd say with average pitchers, average offense, maybe around 8 or 8.5 is the over under. But I've seen the Cubs Brewers games last week when they had the doubleheader. It was like 6.5, 7. The conditions are super pitching friendly. So I would recommend, you know, maybe you're adding him the day before or the morning and just check and make sure that like the wind's not blowing out. It's not going to, you know, torpedo your ratios or anything like that. Cause you know, that type of stuff is really difficult to predict in advance, even if the matchups are good.
And then the other guy, Kershaw's kind of interesting because he's kind of been on Nick's like do not start list for a couple weeks. You know, partially just because he doesn't have it anymore. You know, it's probably safe to say that, but he's still a really good pitcher, and with 2 really soft matchups coming up, even though it's not a 2-start week for him, I believe he gets the Pirates on Wednesday, I believe, and so he isn't lined up for a 2-start week, but regardless, like it's a really good matchup for him. His stats are actually better than Rea. He's got a 3.06 ERA, 1.15 whip, but it's the strikeout rate that's a little bit lower, 16.3%, which obviously very uncharacteristically Kershaw in the sense of, you know, compared to who he was, you know, 5-10 years ago. But the walk rate's, you know, still decent, 5.9%. He's still really good at suppressing homers. And actually, you know, through 17 starts, he's got 9 wins, 6 quality starts. So even though he's not going super deep in the games, he's still getting wins because he's, after overall a pitcher on the Dodgers. And he actually has had a string of pretty decent starts. I think other than his most, second most recent start where he went 5.2 innings. I think he's managed to get three quality starts. And, you know, he did start out the season with some pretty big duds, just wasn't striking anyone out. So there's a little bit of risk there that, you know, you're not going to get a bunch of strikeout numbers with him. But if you're streaming a guy, you'd probably be lucky to get a guy who's a strikeout in an inning. So, yeah, I think Kirsch in those two, at least those two matchups, it does, you know, make sense to have him out there if you can have him.
Yeah, it's really nice to see, like, the old guard, if you will, pitching well. You know, I know Justin Verlander struggled a little bit, but Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, and Jacob deGrom have all been, you know, varying levels of really good this year. So that's been cool to see. You know, hopefully some of them, you know, go out on a high note for their careers.
Yeah, and kind of one of the things I was thinking about with that whole conversation, Emmett Sheehan was like, oh, does Clayton come back next year? And after the season, man, it would be tough for me to be like, yeah, he definitely should come back. But he still has had some pretty decent numbers, but you can tell by that strikeout rate, it just he just doesn't necessarily he's not the Kershaw of old, and that's okay.
Right, and you can't see him pitching for anybody but the Dodgers.
Exactly. Well, I mean, there was that whole thing where he might go to the Rangers, and
yeah,
that didn't materialize. So yeah, we'll see whatever happens with him in free agency this year.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, just wanted to take a second. You know, obviously we want to know who has good matchups because we want to target those guys, but also important to be aware of who might have a tough schedule for the last few weeks. So the teams that stick out the most on that end are the Braves, Orioles, Reds, Angels, and Rangers. And then just want to talk through a few guys, kind of varying levels of how actionable these are. First one, Spencer Strider. It looks like Atlanta is going to go with a six-man with Chris Sale returning this weekend. And they shuffled. Spencer Strider starts with Hurston Waldrop. They push Strider back a day. So it looks like his next two starts are going to be against the Cubs, which they've struggled lately, but are still an above average offense. And then the last two are the Nats and Tigers. So this is a tough one because his overall score is 3.25 out of 5, which is not bad. But the next two are the toughest two and also the ones that you probably need the most. So, I mean, I think super shallow league Strider is honestly droppable, which is crazy to say, but he's just not the guy that we hoped and that he's been in the past. But I think in your, you know, maybe 12 team and deeper, I think you just got to hold him and hope for the best. And then Trevor Rogers, right? He's having a fantastic season for the Orioles, at least the fantastic last 3 months. Good matchup this weekend at the Giants, but then the Orioles are going to go six man, and it's looking like Dodgers, Blue Jays, and Yankees, which is almost as tough as it gets. Average score is 2 out of 5. Can't drop Rogers, right? He's been fantastic. But, you know, I think if you're planning ahead for your week, you know, you just got to know that he's not going to have a top tier matchup. It's going to be a little bit of a challenging one. And then on new Red, Zach Littell is the next one here. He has an average of 2.25 for his last four starts, which is Toronto, at the Padres, at the Cardinals, which is nice, and then home against the Cubs. I know Littell's been great this year, but I would consider dropping him with these upcoming matchups. I'll see how he looks this week and maybe make your decision based on that. And then Jose Soriano and Yusei Kikuchi, those are kind of the only two rostered Angels pitchers. And they both have really bad whips, and they also don't have any easy starts remaining. So I'd feel comfortable dropping them, honestly, if you haven't already. And then, unfortunately, an ace-type guy, Hunter Green, has a score of 1.25 in his remaining matchups, which is the worst of any pitcher on our sheet. So he has three matchups against top-tier offenses and then one matchup against a second-tier offense. So going to be challenging for Hunter Green down the stretch. Don't think he can really do anything about it, unfortunately, though. And that's after he just faced the Dodgers. So tough last month of the season for Hunter Green.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to Trevor Rogers just because it was a really fun tweet I saw that was shared by Alex Fast, formerly of Pitchless fame. But it's like the stat is since ERA became official in 1913 for the American League, Trevor Rogers is the second AL player to have a sub 1.5 ERA, a sub 800, sub 0.8 whip, and I guess either zero or one hit batters through 12 starts of the season, which that's just a funny stat to add in. Love these types of stats, which is just have random stuff. And I guess through the first 12 starts of the season. So, you know, a little bit of a smaller sample size. The other pitcher to do that is Walter Johnson in 1914. So Trevor Rogers is on an absolutely historic run right now. And unfortunately now he gets this rude awakening of just like a really tough schedule, which is, which is sad to see. But maybe if he's in Walter Johnson form, that those matchups don't matter.
Yeah, the cynical Orioles fan in me has been saying the last couple of weeks that Trevor Rogers has been amazing when we don't really need him to be amazing, and then next year he's going to go back to being like a 4 ERA pitcher. I hope that doesn't happen, but it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, hey, when he got traded to Baltimore, I was like, I was a little surprising that Miami was giving up on him so quickly, because he was basically a rookie of the year candidate when he came up. But yeah, it's nice to see him at least back to, back to being really good this season. But yeah, we'll see how the rest of the season shakes out for him.
Yeah, maybe it'll be a trade where both sides feel like they won. You know, if he can put together a solid year next year, Miami's obviously thrilled with Kyle Stowers. So, you know, it'll be nice if it goes down like that instead of the Orioles getting relentlessly mocked for the trade, which I can sort of understand, but has also been a little over the top.
Yeah. All right, well, that is it for this episode in This Week in Fantasy Baseball. You can find us again on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. Send us your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCa, and you can find Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitchless Podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to the podcast, and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitchless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitchless Discord and get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there, especially as playoffs are starting up. That is all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Have a safe Labor Day weekend. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.